Our next guest on Downtown is a baseball historian, New York Times bestselling author of books like Kings of Queens, Life Beyond Baseball with the 86 Mets, After the Miracle, The Lasting Brotherhood of the 69 Mets, his wonderful book on the 1986 Boston Red Sox in their own words, Two Sides of Glory. Eric Sherman joining us this afternoon. Eric, great to have you back with us.
Oh, it's so great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Pete Rose, the person. You certainly got an insight into him that the average fan wouldn't have. What was that Pete Rose like?
The Pete Rose that I knew was a guy that, if it wasn't for the gambling mess, his legacy would be his smile. You know, right up until the end, I just saw Pete 3 weeks ago. At a show in New York. He was doing his signings like he did something like 100 times a year around the country. I saw him in Cooperstown this summer, and we've had some great chats about baseball. And I've always said that if it wasn't for the mess he got involved with his gambling sickness, which is really what it was, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. And not only that, but he would have gone on to become baseball's greatest ambassador. He absolutely loved the game, but he was a man with a sickness. And, you know, I'm sure you'll get into this more, but it's just a shame that he didn't get the help that he needed because he truly loved the game. He loved interacting with fans. I never saw him turn down a request for a photograph, or to answer a question about baseball. He just loved the game, and that's the side that I hope people will see now. That he just lived, breathed, and ate baseball.
Yeah. Did you ever meet anybody more passionate about the game than Pete?
No, I haven't. It was his entire life. You know, he was a big kid. I don't think he really evolved much past the age of 14 in the sense that he had that love for baseball that a 14-year-old kid would have. Right up until the end, he was still playing in his mid-40s, and he was still going headfirst into bases, and after a bases on balls, he'd sprint to the first, up to first base. I did a book with Steve Blast years ago, the former Pirates pitcher, and he told me that Pete Rose was the only player that he would buy a ticket for his kids to go and see play. And I just think that speaks volumes, especially someone like Steve. He played with Roberto Clemente, he pitched against all these all-time greats. But for him to say that, I've never forgotten that. And when Pete died a couple of days ago, that was one of the first things that popped into my head.
How did his teammates feel about him?
I think his teammates absolutely loved having him as a teammate. Years later, and this is all public. He had some issues with Johnny Bench, but the way that Pete explained it was, when the whole gambling mess came about in 1989, when Rose was suspended from baseball, that was the year that Johnny Bench was going into the Hall of Fame. And it definitely took away some of the attention to Bench, and what should have been, and what probably still was, the apex of his career, getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And then Johnny Bench was very vocal about the fact that this is the one rule you can't break. You cannot bet on baseball. This rule was put in place after the whole Black Sox scandal back in 1919. And it's all about the integrity of the game, but as a person, as a teammate, Bench absolutely loved as did Joe Morgan and Dave Concepcion and Tony Perez and all those great Reds players. You know, you mentioned a book that I did after the miracle on the 69 Mets. I co-authored that with Art Shamsky, member of that team. And Art came up, you know, through the system with Rose and Perez. And you know, just another example of Pete's exuberance for the game. You know, Art told me that Pete wasn't close to being a top prospect. You know, Perez was. You know, Art was a top prospect, but not Pete. But Pete absolutely willed himself to be great. I don't think there's another athlete that got every ounce of talent from his body than Pete Rose.
We're talking with Eric Sherman here on Downtown. What does it say about Pete, too, that he took a nickname that was originally intended to be a bit of a shot at him, I think, from Mickey Mantle, Charlie Hustle, and made that his persona?
Yeah, it was during a spring training game, and, you know, it was, you know, the game was long decided, and Pete, you know, was still, you know, hustling as hard as he could and, you know, running up the first baseline and, you know, diving into a base. And I think it was Whitey Ford. He was on the bench with his buddy Mickey Mantle, and he turns to Mickey and he goes, oh, look at that Charlie Hustle out there. and a reporter got wind of it and relayed that to Pete. And he wrote about it. He put it in his column, and the nickname stuck, and it was one of the great nicknames in baseball history.
No question about that. Whether he's one of the greatest players of all time, I think we have to certainly consider him one of the most important players in baseball history.
Yeah, not the greatest. You know, I think Willie Mays would be in that conversation. If you're talking eras and players that dominated their era, then you have to talk about Babe Ruth. But, you know, most talented would be somebody like a Willie Mays. Pete Rose, again, he just willed himself to be great. He holds something like 70 records. So from that standpoint, yeah, I mean, he's certainly in the conversation as one of the greatest. But he just... he just outplayed anybody that he was up against. It was he just had remarkable fire, you know, he's one of those guys. I think that if there was someone at the ballpark for the first time and maybe the only game they'd get to see, you know, Pete wanted to make sure that they got the full Pete Rose, and that's how he approached every single game he played in, and. You know, I'll just say that, and I'm so glad that I did this, this July when, you know, I sign books on Main Street every induction weekend, and Pete's usually a couple of doors down, and I went over and I brought him a copy of a book that I did with Dwight Evans. It was just released in July, actually, on the great Red Sox right fielder's life. And in the book, just like in a couple of other books, Pete Rose is talked about. And I read the excerpt from the Dewey book and, you know, just saying how Dwight Evans also believes that Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame and gives the reasons why. And also how the baseball establishment has embraced the gambling industry and all these things. So I read him a couple of chapters from the book. And, you know, he looked up, he grinned at me, and he said, well, I agree with everything that Dwight said. So I'm just so glad that I did that because, it must have been really difficult. You know, Pete's made the case before, and I agree with him, that, you know, you probably have steroid users that are in the Hall of Fame. You have alcoholics. You have guys that were involved in drugs. You have wife beaters. You have all, you know, it's not a hall of Boy Scouts. You know, you have the human element in the Hall of Fame, just like you'd have anywhere else. And but like I said at the top of this interview, Rich, I really believe that Pete should have gotten help. And if he had, you know, we're a country that forgives. And I would love to have seen that happen for Pete.
Well, yeah, because for a guy who had the instincts that he had, the love of the game, he certainly knew what the rules were, and especially when he was there managing the Reds. I mean, to me, that tells you how bad that addiction was, that knowing what it could mean to him and his legacy, he still couldn't stop himself.
Absolutely. There's a radio program on in New York, at least, on WFAN in New York. Craig Carton, he was a sports talk. He still is.
He used to do a show with Boomer Esiason, right?
He did, and he got in the jackpot for his gambling addiction, and it cost him his job, almost cost him his family. It didn't, but he has a show, and every week he interviews these sports gambling addicts. And I listen to those shows sometimes, and yeah, I mean, you know, they're all the same. Like, you know, they all lie, about their addiction. They cover it up the best that they can. They never think they're going to get caught. And I mean, this is Pete Rose. I mean, this is the classic illness that Pete Rose had, and he really should have gotten help for it. And it's just a shame, you know, and I think now it would almost be cruel to put him in the Hall of Fame. I think it would be a slap in the face.
Somebody had a comment on social media a couple of nights ago and said, I look forward to baseball officially recognizing Pete's passing, sponsored by FanDuel.
Yeah. God, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I never thought I would live to see the day that, you know, Major League Baseball would have plans to put a team in Las Vegas. And that, how about this? I mean, the Cincinnati Reds, their home ballpark, I mean, they have a sports book in there. I mean, you can't make this up. So I think it's just a shame that, that the baseball establishment didn't come around. And you know what? And at least just put him on the ballot. You know, because you know, what's the harm in that? You know, let the sports writers decide. You know, give him his 10 years, and let the sports writers decide. And if he didn't make it in through the sports writers, you know, put him on a modern era committee and see what happens. But there was always talk that if he was inducted, that a lot of Hall of Famers wouldn't show up. That's been the talking point. That's something that I did not experience at all when I talked to a lot of these guys. Pete Rose's contemporaries, almost to a man, they believe that he should have been in the Hall of Fame. You know, the one exception being Johnny Bench, which kind of surprises me.
Well, but of course, in what he did, unlike the guys who were taking performance-enhancing drugs, he wasn't gaining any kind of performance advantage.
No, none at all. Now, I'm not excusing what he did, because as a manager, even though he claims to have only bet on the Reds, so let's assume that Rose only bet on Cincinnati to win, you know, like five nights a week. If he had a significant wager in one game, you know, the risk there is that if it's a one run game in the seventh inning, especially back in those days in the 80s, maybe he brings in his closer in the seventh inning instead of bringing him in the ninth inning, because he needs to lock down that game. That's where the integrity is at stake, and I get that, and I don't think Pete Rose should ever have managed a game ever again, but I just think the Hall of Fame is different. And you know, it's a lot of people don't realize this, but the Hall of Fame is separate for Major League Baseball.
Right.
So they can do what they want.
And also separate from the Baseball Writers Association, they vote, but it's the Hall of Fame that determines eligibility.
That's correct. Right.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and it's certainly one of the most interesting lives in baseball history. Boy, it's been a tough stretch for you, too. I was thinking about this after Pete passed away. Your wonderful book with Art Shamsky, After the Miracle. What is it, three members of the 69 Mets who have passed away within the last year or so?
Oh, it's been tough. I mean, you know, this year started off with Buddy Harrelson, who was a part of our trip, you know, to see Tom Seaver. You know, of course, Ed Greenpool had passed away. Jim McAndrews, he passed away. Jerry Grody, he passed away. So that's four members of the 69 Mets that are no longer with us just this year alone. And I knew them all pretty well, and it's tough. And you know, you throw, you know, maybe the greatest of all time, Willie Mays, into the mix. I never really got to know him well, but he's another one. And yeah, it's been an extraordinarily tough year. And I know that my dear friend Art Shamsky is taking it hard. It's just shocking, you know. You know, you see these guys, and 2-3 weeks later, you know, you get the news that they passed away, and that's happened a few times this year with some of those guys, and it's life, but it's you know, and they're at that age now, and but it is very difficult, Rich, for sure.
A memorable ending to an otherwise forgettable Red Sox season, as Joe Castiglione was honored in the final broadcast of his remarkable career on Sunday. Joe wrote the foreword to your terrific book, Two Sides of Glory. Do you think we'll ever see a guy stay as long with the team and become as part of the team's legacy as Joe did with the Red Sox?
I think we will. And I know you were expecting a different answer.
No, I'm glad to hear that. That makes me hopeful.
Yeah, I was just having this conversation with a dear friend of mine, Tim Neverett, who was a Red Sox broadcaster.
Yes, we know Tim. He came up here a couple times. We used to bring the Red Sox announcers to town. He's a terrific guy.
Oh, he is. He's my best friend. We played college baseball together at Emerson, and we've been close ever since. And I was telling Tim, I'm like, you know, these play-by-play guys, they hold on as long as they possibly can. You know, I mean, John Sterling in New York, he's back.
Right,
he retired. He was their regular radio play-by-play guy, I want to say, since 1989. I mean, that's a lot of years. That's a good run. And he retired this spring, and then he came back to do the last week of the season, and he's going to do the playoffs. Yeah, Vin Scully, you know, I think it was 67 years. I mean, he did it till the end. Charlie Steiner out in Los Angeles, you know, he's had some health issues, but whenever he can possibly get back to the booth, he's there. So Joe, 42 years, a great run, but I could see it happening again. Now, what's changed is I don't think Major League Baseball is embracing the art of broadcasting like they have in the past.
Right.
Like, I think the days of, you know, like here in New York, for years you had Ralph Kiner, Lindsey Nelson, and Bob Murphy. And with the Yankees, you had Bill Rizzuto, Bill White, and Frank Messer. You had these teams that were together for so, so long. And there was a true value place on broadcasting teams. These were the teams that fans grew up with and identified with. They were truly the soundtracks of summer for, you know, millions of young people. And I think those days are, if they're not completely gone, it's close. But that's what's changed. Now it's just become, you know, you. In these broadcast booths, they'll have seven or eight different announcers. Mm. That, you know, you'll have three that will do a couple of games, and then they'll switch out two of them. And so that's what changed the consistency, I think.
Eric, before we let you go, I want to thank you for helping us get together with your co-writer of the wonderful book, Dewey, Dwight Evans. He was such a delight to talk to, and I'm so appreciative to you for making that possible this past summer.
Oh, well, that was a pleasure. You know, Dwight has really become a dear friend of mine, and he's just such an impressive individual. You know, everybody knows what he did on the playing field. You know, 8 gold gloves, one of the greatest arms of any right fielder in baseball history, more home runs than any American leaguer in the 80s, more extra base hits than anybody in all of Major League Baseball in the 80s. People know that generally about him, but they don't know the backstory about how he raised 2 sons with neurofibromatosis. Both sons eventually succumbed to the disease, as you and your listeners know, and how he was in and out of hospitals, sleepless nights throughout his entire career. And to perform the way that he did is just an inspiration. And so I do encourage your listeners to read that book, because it's just a remarkable story.
It is indeed. Eric Sherman, always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for making some time for us today, and we'll catch you again down the road.
Well, thanks so much, Rich. I look forward to that.